readings today are particularly valuable. The first one is a reminder that the world and the planet are pretty badly flawed, and there's death and destruction all over the place, and we see it all the time and seeing it all around us. And yet the message is, quietly, it's going to be made right. And the second reading is a reminder of how the early Jews were really starving in Jerusalem, and Paul, having a collection in Corinth, go and help them. And the Bob Geldof appeal, and the appeal to the eight countries, is very much in the news now. Half the world is starving, and we've really got to be looking after them. And the gospel message is, there's no fulfillment without a good deal of bad suffering. Jairus is longing to have his darling girl brought back to health, and he's bloody well held up because of a great crowd crowding around the master, and he goes on and on, and then they come and tell him she's dead. Don't waste your time. Don't waste the master's time. Don't be afraid. All manner of things shall be well. And then he leads the Lord to that. Then meanwhile, this poor woman there, having this very embarrassing hemorrhage with no hygiene and no decent doctors. In fact, she was getting worse. And all the time, the shame of it. And then having to creep in behind, then trembling, and then touching his feet. And suddenly, oi, she's whole. Do not be afraid. All manner of things shall be well. So we're celebrating today the great dates and occasion and life of Nicholas Postgate. And he was picked up, catched up he was, baptised in a bairn at Oglebarnby. We say Oglebarnby down in East Yorkshire. I'm not sure how you say it up here, but it's an idea that it's all about giving life. So he's caught just giving life. Much of his life, more than half his priesthood, as we'll talk in a few minutes, is actually down at the other end of the diocese. So he was a long time based at a place called Hulsham, which is just near a place called Thorngambald. You'd never have heard of Thorngambald, you lot, but there'd be no Thorngambald in Essex, and there'd be no Oglebarnby in Essex either. They're Yorkshire places and they're Yorkshire lads. And we're very much talking about them today, because he was a contemporary almost entirely with Mary Ward, whose mother came from Holderness, just near Spurn Point, and although she was born over in the West Riding, and she too is a completely Yorkshire woman, and only just a few years behind Margaret of York. So it's a great celebration of the feel of the faith and the trust of the faith, and it's about looking forward and not looking backwards. And so what we're thinking about really today, my notes will probably blow away, so I do need to look at them ever so often, but if they do, we're caught. But not to worry. I've got notes largely because I just do need to have dates right, and all is more or less right, because there are various historians in the audience, so one has to be careful always when they're around. He was born 1599, so just the end of Elizabeth's reign, about 11 years after Margaret Clitheroe had been put to death. And so then he went only, he was nowhere else in England. After leaving Yorkshire, he goes to Derry, I think it was, and was ordained in 1629. This was at a strange time in England. There was a kind of feeling that the Anglican middle way, with Archbishop Laud and so on, and Robert Bellarmine in Rome, there was a chance possibly of moving back towards unity with the Roman Church, with the Catholic Church there, and there's a great pressure against all that, so trouble is on when he was ordained. And he comes sent back to England, so he was born just at Aiton Bridge, and you all know that, in the little house, the foundation of it is just by the bridge at Aiton Bridge there. But he didn't come back there, he came back to East Yorkshire, and with the Hungits, near Tadcaster, a little place called Saxton. And he was there for quite a few years, and also knowing Thomas Gascoigne of Barnbow. So he's already got connections with all that area that had a lot to do with Margaret Clitheroe and the Bar Convent foundations. So he's working there. And then, after the Hungits, he then went to Lady Dunbar down Holderness. None of you lot up in the north here would know Holderness, but when you go down to Hulsham Hall, Hulsham Mound, Hulsham Church, there is a mausoleum of the Constable family just over the edge, and in the church itself, in the middle of the church, there is a chantry chapel, actually within the church. Only Catholic Mass may descend there. Any Catholic priest may go and say Mass there with the permission of the rector. No rector may say an Anglican service there. It's still a Catholic chapel in the middle of holiness there. Nicholas was there for 12 years, and I've seen the receipt. Lady Dunbar gave him £5 after his service there, and I've seen the receipt signed by Nicholas Postgate. It's in the Hull University Library archives. It's lovely coming on it. The Sunday thing. There he is actually writing a thank you for the gift that she gave him. And then for a while he went to Everingham and was there for quite a while. I was in Everingham only last week where we were celebrating St. Everilda's birthday, and she was there about the same time as the Synod of Whitby was being held, and it's remained a Catholic centre right through the centuries, all through the ages. So he was there with the constables for about 6 years in Everingham, and then after that he moved up to Kilvington, so it's just near Thirsk. And I remember Father Charlie Turner showing me the little outhouse to a house there near to the Kilvington Hall, Kilvington House, where there were still the marks on the wall of where the altar had been, and the altar rails going round, which is now a cow bar. The cows couldn't go through it. So that suddenly comes very near. And he was there quite happily working all over that area until the Franciscans came towards Motherley just after the death of Cromwell. Things were pretty hot during the Cromwellian time, and he's lying pretty low. But then things got easier, and the Franciscans came in 1665, and then he moved back to his own country. So out of his 52 years of work as a priest, 37 of them were in East Yorkshire. And he only came up north really towards the end. And so he came back, and I think he stayed at Egton. I'm not sure whether it was the Egton house, which was the Mass house, or whether it was somewhere in Egton first. And then he came across to Ugthorpe and lived at the Hermitage and was in this area for the last part of his life. And then, although things were easier then, it was still pretty bad. There's a lovely account I read some time ago of how the pursuivants were trying to get the priests. The priests were able to come in at Whitby, the Chumleys and so on were able to come in because there wasn't any road over from Pickering. So the Yorkshire Moors were all forest. So the Pickering Forest belonged to the Crown and went along the top of the moors. So Big Betty and Racecross and so on, those are the boundaries of the Royal Forest. And this side belonged to Whitby Abbey. And so there wasn't any road over. But the pursuivants, or the constables, came over from Pickering on one occasion to try to capture the priests who were working in this area. I don't think Nicholas Postgate was here at that particular time. And they left their horses tethered down at Egton Bridge and then start hunting around to try to find the different houses where priests might be hiding. And the local lads, that's you lot, the local lads managed to just get to the horses and hamstrung the lot. As an animal-loving person, I don't agree, but in fact they did it. And so the constables had to walk home over the moors, and they couldn't get back. I have no idea what to do with a hamstrung horse, whether it does actually get better again afterwards, but I don't know, people who had hamstring problems will know the answer to that. But that was the way it was able to be kept going in this area quietly. And then there's suddenly a chap who'd been going on for the priesthood and then left and got dissatisfied and so on, called Titus Oates, went and started a pretense plot. And it was one of the men from London in on that, managed to know his way through Whitby and then came along and so caught Father Nicholas Postgate baptizing a baby at Uncle Barnby, and then he was taken off to York. And so that's the outline of his life, and it's got lots of messages, I think, for us. First of all, this tremendous way in which when he went to the trial, the judge was very much in favour of trying to let him off. Because he was in his 80s, and I know what that's like, and he was really in all sorts of troubles, and the judge knew perfectly well the title, so his plot was a complete lie. And so he's doing his best, but he can't change, that's the statutes. It's like judges have to follow the law. We're seeing a bit of that at the moment. And so this is what happens, so he's going to have to be condemned. And while he's there, the only condemnation was a witness of one of the girls, one of the women in this part, had seen him say Mass and admitted to the constables she'd seen him say Mass. She felt terribly ashamed and went to see him. And there he was in the prison in New York. And all he did was, "Oliver, lots of love. I love you dearly. You're forgiven." And he gave her the money to get back up here. And it's absolutely right. It's this sense of the importance of our lives. Suffering is really unimportant. No suffering that anyone can impose on you can touch your inner self. You are inviolate. Your inner self is untouchable. And that's this tremendous message we have to learn somehow. All sorts of things can go wrong, as in the gospel. We saw it going wrong for that woman and then Jairus. Things can go wrong, but I am not. And it's so sad that people often, when they suffer very badly, think they must be guilty. Particularly for people who've been abused and mishandled and so on. They think they must be guilty. Do not be afraid. You are absolutely whole within yourself. And Nicholas was right there without any worry, and that certainty of that. And it's brought to our notice nowadays when we just think of the suffering of Christ. You're going to have to be hanged, drawn and quartered. The horror of that. What they did was, when you were still alive, they ripped out your heart, and you could actually see your heart. Some of those who were put to death in that way actually spoke after their heart was out. And the terrible way in which they were treated. The hangman wouldn't do that for Nicholas. He actually made sure he was properly dead before he had to do that. But the horror of it, what they went through, and when one reads about it, it's going on just the same now. So we just think of our Lord. He going through that absolutely horrific death of being scourged and crowned and then nailed for hours. The absolute agony of the suffering of the human person. The inner person is inviolate. The inner person is inviolate. Your inner self is untouchable. And so we think of that when I was in Auschwitz only a very short time ago, the suffering of that. And it comes to my mind very much a Jewish lady called Edith Stein, who'd become a Carmelite. And there she is walking into the gas chamber and the horrific things that were going on. And she has two little children beside her, two little tiny kiddies walking one on either hand. And she just says, "Have no fear, we're just going to our people." You're untouchable in your inner self. That's the tremendous news. And the same, of course, when the cardinal was out in Ethiopia. I remember a year or two ago talking of the suffering of things, because it's on our minds now, isn't it, with Bob Geldof getting on the warpath again, and quite rightly, about us not really making trade easier for the third world countries. But Bob Geldof got the Cardinal Basil Hume to go out there. And somebody was telling me the story that while Basil Hume was looking at one mother just sitting cross-legged on the ground there, absolutely all starving, and there's a little child on her lap. But while he's looking, the little child died. And then he looks up a bit and sees the woman's breasts absolutely dried out. He looks up a bit further and she can't even speak, and their eyes met. The cardinal said it changed his life. Nothing you can do but just be there. And the horror of it, and we see it going on at all times now, in the Middle East, in Israel, in the Gaza Strip, all this kind of going on. And the great thing is to be certain of certain things. We're always moving forward. That first reading, a reminder, the earth is flawed, the planet is flawed. We are sent to be carers of the garden. The garden of God is the universe. The garden of God is this planet. We're meant to be lifting it and bringing it towards wholeness. And Christ's death for us means we are able to bring it to wholeness in our own small way. So that great need now, looking forward like that with great courage and confidence, to be absolutely assured that absolutely every human worth. Refugees coming in, we don't want black people all over the place, we don't want this or that. Every single person is a child of God and being created and loved at this moment. And my life's work is just like looking after my garden, very important, and looking after the animals and not hamstringing horses when I see them, and looking after all the creatures that are around me and every human person. Just quietly lift them up. It might appear outwardly as if the diocese is falling apart, and he probably is, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The faith is there, and the deep faith and care and love for people, and our great care and love for one another. It's appalling to see the way, for all sorts of reasons, Christians would kill Muslims all over the place. Catholics would kill Protestants. Still goes on in Northern Ireland, in Glasgow, and various places. My open heart must be for the whole planet. Every single person on the planet is the object of my love. My love and care as fully as I can. And I'll make a balls of it, I'll make all sorts of mistakes, and I'll get it wrong, and I'll come back to selfish over and over again. But not to worry. I must walk with the Lord. I must be faithful to my prayer. I must be faithful to the Eucharist. And I must be faithful to having no fear. Do not be afraid. All shall be well. All manner of things shall be well. May Father Nicholas Postgate be praying for us all, baptizing us into new life. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.